This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, December 13th. Earlier this month, Dr. Robert Lorenz was in Fayetteville to deliver a Barringer Lecture in conjunction with the Arkansas Center for Space and Planetary Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Dr. Lorenz has spent his entire professional career working with the Cassini-Huygens mission. That's the effort to learn more about Titan, the second largest moon in our solar system.
We think of Titan as a planet in its own right. I mean, it's bigger than the planet Mercury, and it has so much going on. In many ways, it's more of a planet than many planets.
And when we mention atmosphere, that is a rarity, just to set standards here, that is a rarity for moons.
Absolutely. I mean, Titan's atmosphere is substantially thicker than the one we are breathing now, and that is completely unique in our solar system. There are a couple of other moons with, you know, atmospheres, you know, 100,000 times thinner than the Earth's, or even less than that. But Titan is really quite exceptional.
The Cassini-Huygens mission has been a combined effort of NASA, the European Space Agency, and the Italian Space Agency. Dr. Ralph Lorenz began his work on the mission in 1990, and he's written the book Titan Unveiled, about what's been learned about Titan through the mission.
And, you know, we're cutting metal in the mid-90s, and the spacecraft was launched in 1997. But then it took us 7 years to get out to Saturn and Titan. So it was 2004 that we arrived in the Saturnian system and began studying Titan with Cassini's instruments. Cassini's sort of the mothership that goes around in orbit around Saturn and flies past Titan. And on the third of those orbits, Cassini released the Huygens probe, a sort of smaller self-contained package that was built primarily in Europe, which parachuted down through this smog down to the surface. And that was really a very exciting moment in planetary exploration.
Of course it was. I mean, that was the first anything that had been on that surface, at least, you know, from this planet.
Well, exactly. And Titan was the biggest unknown surface in the solar system at that time. And we'd seen basically the surfaces of all the major moons. But because of this atmosphere, Titan was completely unknown. And because there was the possibility of liquids on the surface, you know, that opens the possibility of you know, lakes and rivers and you know, all kinds of familiar landscape-shaping processes under very different conditions from the Earth. So it was very much a big adventure. We just did not know what we were going to see. Would it be a cratered landscape like the moon, or would it be a global ocean, or would it be a big desert, or would it have river channels everywhere? And, of course, the fun thing is it turns out to be all of the above. Titan seems to have a very, very varied landscape, a very rich balance of geological and meteorological processes, and in many ways looks a lot like the Earth. Which in some respects is quite a surprise, because, you know, it's a body with a surface gravity that's about the same as the Earth's moon. You know, if you were standing on Titan, you could, you know, jump 6 feet in the air and in sort of slow motion. The atmosphere is four times thicker, and the chemistry is very different. Instead of rock, you have ice. Instead of water, you have liquid methane. But despite all of these differences, many of the landscape features we see, and in fact the cloud features and other meteorological features we see, are very similar. So the physical process is the same, but the rates and scales and working materials are different. So Titan's like a big laboratory for studying a lot of terrestrial processes.
You know, a layperson hears this and begins to let the imagination run wild of what, I don't know, decades of research might be able to tell us. I mean, could this give us hints to an earlier Earth, or...
It seems that there are some quite significant similarities between Titan today and the early Earth, and probably more particularly early Titan and the early Earth. The Earth's atmosphere, for example, you know, has about 20% oxygen in it, and the rest is nitrogen. The only other significant nitrogen atmosphere in the solar system is Titan's. But Titan doesn't have any oxygen there. It's very cold, and the oxygen basically freezes out. But it does have methane, which kind of plays the role of water vapor. But this action of sunlight on methane in Titan's atmosphere turns out to be possibly relevant for the early Earth, because the early Earth likely had a bit of methane in the atmosphere too, before oxygen appeared. Oxygen only appeared about halfway through the Earth's history, about 2 billion years ago, once plants evolved. And the same sort of organic smog may have formed in the Earth's atmosphere that we see in Titan's atmosphere today. And that would have had quite profound effects on the Earth's climate, you know, how warm the Earth would have been. And so by studying Titan, we can understand some of the physics of this kind of climate effect and process, you know, better. And of course, now we have to see everything in a sort of much wider tapestry. I think the count of extrasolar planets just went past 500. And many of these extrasolar planets that we know about are giant planets like Jupiter or Saturn. And so many of those probably have moons like Titan around them. And so there are probably a lot of maybe much warmer and therefore much more Earth-like Titans in the universe that we don't really know about, but understanding how Titan works and how that fits in with the story of the early Earth, you know, begins to paint a very rich picture of what might be out there.
You start working on a project in 1990. You get to the point in 97 where you're going to send it away. How much holding of collective breath is there among the, 16 countries that participate?
It's of that order. I think it's been worked out. There are certainly several thousand people who are involved at one stage or another in the development of Cassini. I mean, you know, these large space projects, especially the international ones, are you know, in a way what we do instead of building pyramids. You know, it's a collective endeavor that's bigger than any of us, and it lets us do things that we couldn't do alone. Yes, there were a lot of eggs in that basket, you know, many, many person years had been invested, which is what the dollars pay for. It's not like we put dollar bills in a rocket and send it off into space. It's investment in technology. It's, professional jobs and, you know, building not only the hardware, but building international relationships and a new understanding of things. All that comes together, and then there's this focal point, the launch, where basically it's all out of your hands. The scientists don't get anywhere near things at that point, and it's, you know, the U.S. Air Force and the company that builds the rocket that are running things. And, you know, the history of the space business is such that there's, a couple of percent chance that any given rocket is going to blow up. So, yeah, we were there was a lot of trepidation that night in October 97. But the launch went flawlessly, actually, and the mission has been a great success. There was, of course, another very tense moment, which was the moment that we were supposed to hear from the Huygens probe, because it had been released from the Cassini mothership at the end of 2004 and was on its own, just with three clocks running for 3 weeks. And then it was supposed to have hit Titan's atmosphere, and the clocks would have woken it up, and the parachute would have come out at, you know, 1.5 times the speed of sound. And, you know, it was very much on people's mind that the previous year, the Beagle 2 spacecraft that had been sent to Mars was never heard from again. And, you know, we were all worried that the same fate might befall Huygens, but amazingly, the radio transmission from Huygens, which was received by Cassini and then relayed ultimately to the Earth with the data, the presence of that signal, the fact that Huygens was transmitting, was detected by the Green Bank radio telescope in West Virginia, and that immediately told us, you know, half the battle was over. You know, whatever happened, it hadn't been lost without a trace. It had entered the atmosphere, the parachute had come out, the transmitters were on. You know, the rest is going to be gravy. But it was a very tense moment.
Something like this does not happen inexpensively. That's understood. There isn't, at times, as much resolve as there are others to spend money on exploration in space. Perhaps in the United States we're at a point where there isn't as much resolve. If you could talk to someone and tell them why it is worth doing this, what would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question, and as old as the space age itself. And as I see it, there are really three reasons for exploring planets and Titan in particular. I mean, first is that we live on a planet, and we are subject to planetary processes like convective storms and greenhouse warming and geological change. And understanding how these processes work is important to us in the long run. And we don't understand it all. We can't really understand it all just by studying the Earth, because as circumstances change, the atmosphere warming or whatever it is, we can't necessarily extrapolate very well. But if we build models that can replicate what we see on the Earth, and they can replicate the very different conditions we see on other planets, then we can become more confident in predicting how things will change as circumstances change. The other point is, we have deep questions about where we come from. Are we alone in the universe? What steps led up to the evolution of life, and even before that, the chemical complexity that led to life. And Titan is very interesting because it has this rich organic chemistry. We don't think there's anything alive on Titan today. We can't be sure there's not, but we don't think so. It's for a start, it's too cold. But you have this rich chemical factory that's producing the sort of building blocks of life. And we don't know how far along the chain of increasing complexity towards life that has gone. Are there sets of systems of chemicals in Titan's hydrocarbon lakes that line up like DNA, that encode information, or that multiply themselves? They don't have to be DNA, but they might have similar sort of functionality. So, the part of understanding where we belong in the universe is really, really a big part of that. And then the third leg, if you like, is more technological. This is a worthwhile endeavor to have smart people working on, so that for one thing in particular, smart people are encouraged to come into science and engineering. And often they won't stay in the space business. They'll move off and go into biotech or computers or something. But the economy relies on this kind of activity, and space is a great focal point for that. And in fact, even more from a more utilitarian perspective, many of the instruments we use to study the Earth and understand the changing climate originate from the planetary program. The first microwave radiometers, which is an instrument used to map out snow and ice cover on the Earth, for example, that instrument was first developed to go to Venus and understand the clouds and the surface temperatures there. So you have these spin-offs technologically that are important, but probably the most important spin-off from the space program is the stimulus into science and engineering. So these are really the three big reasons for me that I think it's worth doing space.
Dr. Ralph Lorenz is the author of the book Titan Unveiled, and is a research scientist at the Applied Physics Laboratory, Johns Hopkins University. He delivered the fall 2010 Barringer Lecture this month at the University of Arkansas in conjunction with the Arkansas Center for Space and Planetary Sciences. This is Ozarks at Large.